Hello and welcome to Dinis Guarda YouTube podcast powered by openbusinesscouncil.org and citiesabc.com. We are in a very special moment in history when humans are being partly having to question what's the fate that actually they created, and as well our kind of children of technology and elements that coming out of us are going to reframe and redesign the world. And this channel has been portraying some of the personalities that are actually mapping and creating and as well designing this new journey when it comes to technology and business. But one of the things is that the sense of urgency is becoming bigger than ever. I would say that probably at the moment we have a lot of panic, a lot of hope, but as well a lot of, I would say, confusion. So this brings me to my special guest that that has as well been working on this on these topics, and as well as a forward-thinking personality when it comes to the areas of AI, and as well how to scale technology, digital transformation, and all these areas for us. And this series are partly trying to answer some of these problems. And I'm actually pushing the show to go in more sense of urgency, because what I feel right now speaking with people is definitely the lack of understanding. So I welcome to our series Brandon Donnelly, that is the founder of Intellect Horizon, a forward-thinking company at the forefront of technology innovation. With a career spanning several years, Brandon has been building a substantial footprint and intellectually in the academic as well, especially in the areas of innovation in artificial intelligence, machine learning, augmented reality, virtual reality, and digital transformation. And as well, part of his work with Intellect Horizon that we're going to be focusing today has been as well involved and an impressive track record in terms of as a creator and as a technologist. He holds 11 patents and has secured 4 trademarks. And as well, one of the things he's been working is how to take his academic work, which is as well quite impressive, with the background that includes a postgraduate diploma in strategy and innovation from the University of Oxford, say Business School, and a doctor in philosophy in strategical communication from Regent University. So I'm particularly interested because these are two areas that interested me a lot, how we put the ideas, the technology, and the practice. And as well, Brand Donnelly has been working as well with Intellect Horizon, which is one of the areas that I want to address. That is a very high-profile event at a digital conference that touches the areas of AI and Web3. That is going to be in October 25th. 8th, 2023. But this interview is not just about the event, it's about himself and about the personalities that are going to be featured, but as well about how we can actually leverage this, all these challenges that you're doing. So Brandon, welcome to our series. I'm very excited to have you here, and as you see as well, very focused.
Fantastic to spend time with you, Dinis, and here, that sounds so impressive. I was just amazed that unintentionally my blazer seemed to match the drapes, but if I was slightly more narcissistic, I would say that that was all part of the plan. No. Very good to be here.
My pleasure. So let's start a bit about your background. So you have a very strong academic background, as I mentioned, that touches actually two areas that are increasingly more important, from philosophy to AI. And actually, one of the fathers of AI is actually a person that came from philosophy as well. So it's quite interesting how we can actually look at this. And I would like to touch first, so if you look at your academic background and how we've been building this academic work in areas so deep as philosophy and then in areas so advanced as technology, because a lot of people are still not mixing the two things. And I'd like to start probably on this background of yours. How did you follow this path?
I feel like I wish I could say in the beginning, but sadly, you know, it's actually a combination of Asperger's and ADHD in practice. So I'm very, very good. I feel like most people who have a doctorate at hyper-focusing on something and like a dog with a bone, not letting it go. When it came to like a lot of the psychometrics and strategic communication, it was actually, I am horrible at talking to people. I should probably figure out why. And then because, you know, I've been a nerd, my nerd credentials have spanned since I was born, I feel, you know. Instead of a binky, it was a stick of RAM that was keeping me quiet. And I wanted to figure out how can we look at digital identities, personas, and the phenomena of communication. So all of those fancy words just mean that I can talk good and maybe I can say something pretty. And that's about it.
Wow. Now, that's interesting because that this features in terms of each of our personality traits makes the strength or weakness of us. And if you look at the personalities like Geoffrey Hinton, that started as well studying philosophy and then he ended up actually being one of the fathers of artificial intelligence because he tried to solve problems. So about your studies and as well this kind of, let's look at your basic studies and as well your PhD. Do you want to tell us first of all about that and what you study and how you've been putting the two things together?
Sure. So, I mean, I think the academic background was one of just curiosity. I have several degrees there that aren't listed from a range of different universities, and I'm an unofficial presidential technology fellow at the Asia School of Business, which is in partnership with the MIT Sloan School of Management. My fascination has largely been understanding the way in which people communicate with technology, through technology, and represent themselves with technology. That sounds kind of like a mouthful. And what I started to find was actually, I think, quite unique in the sense that one of the greatest challenges that we have is not whether or not something can be built, not whether or not there's a ability of innovation or a willingness for it, but it's the way that we're articulating things, sharing our vision, and doing so with highly scalable and complex systems. And so a lot of the work that I've done has ranged from time over at the University of Alaska in Fairbanks to I feel like I was bundled up there at minus 40 to where I am right now, which is Bali in plus 40. So it's like, you know, I've gotten to see the range. But as a part of that, technology, I feel, is an expression of humanity. We design and develop things to hopefully take care of needs, to address the things that we're trying to solve as a group. Maybe sometimes we invent problems to then solve said problems. That's a deeper conversation. And it's really better trying to understand those systems so that we can speed the rate of innovation and then adapt minds at scale in preparation, especially for the acceleration with things around AI, which has been a lot of the work that I've been doing. That and some algorithmic stuff too for fun.
So in terms of career, so you mentioned the collaboration between the different universities, but tell us a bit about some highlights that you want to have in terms of your career. So you've been an advisor to MyTech Dev. You've been as well, of course, you lead the Intellect Horizon. And you've been as well involved in a couple of initiatives, like you mentioned. So I think if you could just tell us about what is some of these parts you want to highlight in terms of the present stage of your career.
Yeah, I mean, in a nutshell, I started out, ironically enough, wanting to take a girl out to a concert that was really expensive. And that was my great first inspiration, as I feel first loves are always that way. And I started a media website, and from there, I got the wonderful opportunity to go to events like Comic-Con, all the way down to younger Brandon getting to interview people like Korn and Rob Zombie, so heavy metal singers, you know, which was quite funny. From there, I went and I was told by my parents I needed to get a real job. So I went into the pharmaceutical industry And 14 years ago, I had the wonderful opportunity to work on development of remote care using this little thing called Google Glass. And we worked on superheated and chilled compounds with acoustic levitation at Argonne National Laboratory. We worked on a remote care system with Google using their Meetup platform. And like all Google, half of the Google products, both of the ones I was developing the remote care on got shelved and put to death, as Google wanted to do. So from there, I became a CTO of a medical device technology company. Silly me, little did I know what I was doing at the time, and I just blindly said, yes, that sounds great, I can do it. And then came the 4 a.m. calls, you know, working with a fantastic global team of developers. It gave me exposure to a lot of different countries. And I got to work on, I think, a lot of public policy, including help craft the ISO 15415 updates that got to come out, and built a context from there, a group of contacts from there. We started, ironically enough, the Beyond IoT conference series, and we sold out for 4 years at the Cork Institute of Technology. We started out with 20,000 euros of extra marketing budget in a dream. And we touched on a lot of topics of the insecurity of technology and to the flip side of the coin, the great liberation and opportunity by it. And from there, I got burnt out. This is when my mom had a stroke. This is when I got overworked and my head hit the wall. I got my face palm by the universe. And then from there, started up a startup, went through that journey, made a bunch of patents and some silly things like sprayers, shipped tens of millions of them, and then decided at this point, how can we give back to society? How can we improve the world rather than take from it? And how is it that we're able to, and I don't have any great desire or specific knowledge of how to save humanity, but how can we give a platform and a voice to those who have an opportunity to get their word out there? And that's what I've been working on.
Thank you. And it's, we all need that more than ever. So tell us about Intellect Horizon. How did it came, the project, and as well how it works, and as well some of the personalities that are going to be present?
It's quite ironic, actually. It started much like what we're having here. Some words were exchanged. But I had a wonderful chat with the founder of Dragonscale AI. His name is Rohit Rai. He was acquired originally from Apple, and then he escaped their clutches. I should probably say a more positive version of that, but then spun out and had money that was stolen from his crypto wallet. And the police told him, well, too bad, we can't do anything. I then, having taken a course in quantum computing from my friend Seppi, who teaches quantum and AI and data science from the University of Oxford, got to listen to her. She's a company called Pixelar. And because I'm a nerd, like a bad punchline, as I said from the beginning, she came up with something called PixoChat, which is the Star Trek translator. Translates in real time a whole bunch of different languages. And I was like, wow, these are big brains. They know things. And we said, let's do a workshop. And then we're like, if we get 500 people, that would kind of be cool. Then having this conversation about the challenges of AI, the social implications, the political, the upheaval that's coming, all the way down to pedagogy, which gets the academics all excited. Or the way that we know things, the way that we teach things, and the way that we learn things. We even managed to get one of my mentors from MIT, Dr. Sanjay Sarma, who's the also among running six different labs, being one of the founders of EDX or edX and MIT OpenCourseWare, is now the CEO and El Presidente of the Asia School of Business, and is working on some really cool things. But we got together, and I think I had something that really, truly terrified me. I had the academics agree that we needed to have a conference and a conversation. And anybody that knows academics, and I say this with all the love in my heart, knows that you put two of them in a room and they can't agree that they're in a room, and they can't agree that there's two of them at the same place. And we kept growing the initiative. And we said, how is it that we can take a lot of the challenges that startups are facing? So we created something called Starshot Startups. And we have over $270 billion in private equity and venture capital funds that are going to secret shop and listen to pitches of people changing the world. We have folks that are going to announce initiatives like the Earthshot Prize, which is a Prince William Foundation. And there are new partnerships with some of these universities in Southeast Asia. There's been a lot of video game closures, studio closures. And my time living in the Valley, I said, great, let's get some recruiters. So I asked some friends, and now we created Starship Seekers. And now we have every major technology company and video game studio represented that are going to be there to help people find their next crew. We say to take them to the stars. I think the final part that we thought was interesting is MIT has this concept called Mens et Manus, or hand in mind, action learning. This is where we came up with CyberClash. Different universities across the world on the conference are going to open up their campuses and are going to teach on a hackathon, both digital and physical participants, how to learn AI, how to work with AI to code, how to use it in robotics and IoT. And because we're a little bit unhinged and I had some raised eyebrows there, we then said, let's make it all for free. That'll show them. And let's do it without sponsors. So it's a no strings attached conference. And we get to highlight the issues of XR, which is what we see, what we hear, AI, which is what we know, and Web3, which is how can we trust any of it? Presently, I'm very delighted to say that, you know, free sells well. I don't know if anybody told you this, but we've already achieved 14,000 registrations. So I think we hit above our 500 number. We have incredible speakers like Matthew Wheat, who's the director of the University of Oxford Department of Continuing Education. We have Aaron DeFerraria, that is the one of the leaders at the University of Waterloo. He's working with executive education, continuing education. Regent University, we have their senior vice presidents and their philosophizing big brains and cybersecurity experts that are tag teaming as well to speak, to highlight, and to try to bring maybe not answers, but to provide perspectives so that people can start to ask the right questions. And that's where we are now. And based off of the rate of speed, who knows where we'll end up by the time that this thing is done. We already have governments talking about a year two, and I'm just trying to get through year one.
Congratulations, first of all. It's a great panel and definitely does a lot of great people. So you have very important panels here and a lot of very high profile, I would say, humanity moonshots and as well challenges, because at the end of the day, this is all right now. I think everyone is lost with when it comes to AI. And I think the biggest challenge right now is definitely how we can actually map some kind of journey that doesn't disrupt more than we are already disrupted. Because, of course, the irony is that it's very small people making the decisions, but the huge part of humanity, although we have better capacities than ever, probably in humanity development, we are as well in a lot of different velocities. So let's start by one of the things that that is one of your major panels in the beginning. I would like to start and this, I would like one question on this topic, and I know that there's different speakers on this, but I would like to talk about this. And this is actually a topic that Dr. Seppi Shakaveg is going to be mentioned. So the future of enabling technologies using applies AI and quantum computing. So definitely these are probably the most disruptive technology in history. And as well, probably the most complicated for people listening to us, because everyone has an opinion about AI, but anyone that is actually using AI to change the world economy, besides disruption, that's the bigger question. And definitely, of course, there's great things coming out of AI, but I would like to see, how do you see this topic? Of course, without going too much, the idea is for people to go to the conference, but just your opinion on this topic in general.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the inspirational things is there's individuals that know what they're talking about, like yourself. And then you have a lot of talking heads that are overnight fly-by AI experts, and they have a platform and they'll use impressive words like foundational models and generative AI and LLM, but they won't actually know what any of it means, but it sounds really cool. And then they'll say that it's going to take our jobs. And actually, it's something that we probably should feel slightly insecure about, because you have multi-model AI models now that are effectively able to synthetically generate beautiful content. Words that I think I would not be able to say so eloquently. And it's now getting proliferated into voice, into video, with solutions like Runway ML. And the question is, well, what happens when all of the intellectually heavy parts of humanity are suddenly removed? What happens to the social elements when suddenly it's just AIs talking to AIs? It starts to kind of sound like something out of Black Mirror. I think we just gave a free plug to Netflix. But these are really large existential crises. And we found out about the sociocultural impact of social media and how it actually changed an entire generation. And now we're providing these models that have a ton of data and a wonderful capacity to do great good and creativity or great tears. And we're making them open source. We're making them free to the world. And we're also not really certain on how to prepare people, both young and old, for this. And I think on that side, it can be quite scary. On the flip side of the coin, because we want to be optimistic about this, man, is there a lot of work that we no longer have to do because it can be freed up through automation? We have the capacity with AI that only has the ability to synthetically generate that of which humanity has created so far, but not what is undiscovered that we could create tomorrow, until we reach singularity, perhaps. And I think one of the components is trust. Web3 blockchain, in theory, was built on the idea that there's a ledger, that there's visibility, and that you have custody of control throughout the ownership of the life of something. Because this is a major problem. There's these black box AI models, and we're not really sure who made them, what biases created them. And if you ask ChatGPT, ChatGPT says, no problem, you can trust me. So I'm sure it's probably fine. But it's a battle of these tech titans. Right now, the other challenge that we have is we're blindly giving access and implementing these things into our society, into our software. And we're not really questioning what are the potential ethical considerations. We saw this with the self-driving cars of, do you kill the passenger on the inside to save people on the outside, or vice versa? So there's actually a lot, as you were saying, of human touches that we have yet to decide. There's not enough qualified people in actuality maybe aspirationally there is. And this is, I think, the great opportunity for us to have a dialogue and to not just come as people from one country or college or identity, but more so as a public discussion on humanity, and to really, at a point in time that is going to, in my personal opinion, be greater than the Industrial Revolution or the age of the internet, unlock human potential. And if we have that capacity of creativity, ingenuity, and vision, let's try to make sure that it's a utopia, maybe not a dystopia, and that we're going in eyes wide open, as opposed to going on a roller coaster ride that we're not allowed to get off, and we're terrified at what happens at the end. So we'll see what happens. And we have very big brains that are going to talk all about that, which is very exciting.
So one of the things that you have is really a huge academic list of speakers that are from top leading global universities and some high profile personalities here, like you mentioned. So how do you see, and as well you being an academic as well, how you see the relationship with AI and the academia? Because at the moment, that's the end of the day, what makes us humans is our capacity to create and to learn. And we know right now that any generative language model is already more advanced than all of us together. So how do you see this challenge when it comes, especially with AI and education and universities?
I can say that there's going to be very big winners and very big losers. And I won't name specific names, but a human student brought the downfall of the president of Stanford. And I won't get into the implications of that, and I'm not qualified enough to talk about all of the particulars on that. But what I can say is academia on multiple levels has maintained the same learning style, as Oxford will proudly tell you, for over and around 1,000 years. And the problem is humans have slightly changed since then, and yet we're saying that our pedagogy hasn't. And the difficulty with that takes place on a couple of different levels. So the first part comes with something that's called the replication crisis. And this has been a foundational problem of the way in which academia publishes papers and the constant pressure to have citations and to bring gold stars back to their university to say how well they've done. And the challenge that we have now is a very large body of knowledge has not been able to be replicated. And we don't talk about it because it's an unpleasant truth. So what happens when somebody unleashes an AI to trove through all of the academic journals and papers, and we find that 5%, 10%, 50% were actually falsified in some way or another? How does academia that focuses on credibility handle that? This is terrifying to them right now. The second is the way in which instructors instruct. And this is, do we blame the student for using ChatGPT to write the essay for them, when we should be looking at the way in which we're delivering content to the students that disallows them to use the tool like a calculator during their instruction? I'm amazed with the capacity of AI and what it can do to provide universal education that is tailored to the interests of students, that is delivered in ways that they understand and that is recursive in knowledge, and so that they feel not excluded, but that they're included in that learning journey and that they can succeed and achieve. Don't get me wrong. It has to be rough as a professor, or in most cases, a TA, to say grade a philosophy paper on the merits, and does a paper cup have a soul? And I'm not qualified to answer that one. And to grade it 100 times over for all of the students. But imagine being a student having to write about that concept and that theory. I'm starting to feel old now, when we're in this TikTok generation, and when our attention span is not adapted to the same long-form media as well. Wouldn't it be awesome if we have the capacity and the ability so that a mentor, a professor, a student at any level, instead of grading that same paper, can look at the areas where people is having challenges, where they're struggling, and be able to give very dedicated and focused care, where we're able to detect a lot of the challenges, and we're able to also help as a group focus, organize, and structure from a national efficiency standpoint, improve learning outcomes. But then I think the final piece really comes societally. Web3 is really cool. Really, really cool. You have these things called DAOs, right? Decentralized Autonomous Organizations. And what they do, if done correctly, have the potential of getting rid of the entire executive suite. I joke and say that the software engineers had such a wonderful time with their bosses that they've managed to find a way to eventually replace them. And I think the question that we have then is, in an automated world where synthetic generation is everywhere, where 70% of jobs over 5 years are going to be touched in some way, shape, or form, oftentimes drastically and dramatically. And we see this with the challenges with the strikes that are happening out in California. The question is, what is it that we as humanity are learning? What is it that we're teaching? And how does that shape? Because in a world where we're going to have almost unlimited efficiency in many ways, right? How can we prepare for the reshaping of what's important to us as a society and culture? Again, I don't know.
No one knows. Yeah, completely. No, but you touched a lot of important points. So I know that we're passing the 1 hour, so I want to be on time on this. So just to, as one of two last questions. So one of the things I want to touch, and it goes more into your research areas. So if you look at one of the things, and I'll use a quote from Geoffrey Hinton, which is as well a person that comes from philosophy, but it changed the entire perception. And now is one of the people that is panic with his own inventions. But his quote is, I will quote, "Creating machines that can learn and reason like humans is not something that can be achieved by following a fixed set of rules. It requires a combination of data, algorithms, and neuroscience-inspired principles." So this is where it comes philosophy and where it comes the different parts. But how can we pass this when we humans have a lot of different principles? And of course, if you are in the Western part of the world, you have these principles. If you are in other parts, you have different principles. And as well, the notion of power is something that is very subjective, because for some people, power is a small thing, for others, it's everything. And as well, the sense of ethics is even more complex. So I know there's a big question, but especially on your research, how do you see the philosophy in AI and the ethics in AI?
This is perhaps the biggest topic. You didn't pick up a small one, that's certain, you know. But I expect nothing less. So fundamentally, right, if you research computational linguistics, the utilization of English in a lot of programming languages and a lot of these models is something that then has a Western bias, because you're excluding or mistranslating voices that would normally be able to provide input or speak or have a dialogue. I think a lot of the actions against the tech companies, that the anti-monopoly practices and everything, are in part because traditional power of the state is largely becoming eroded when you have technology that is ubiquitously spread and has such power and control. And this goes back to your point of, right, what and who are really pulling the strings of the puppet. One of the challenges with AI is if you're going for information and it's not telling you certain things, right? Who's the one that's enabling or disabling certain stories? If every time we ask ChatGPT about your podcast and all that you're doing, and it says that you're wonderful, and somebody asks, is there anybody greater? And it says, there is only one, and that is Denise, and he knows everything. You should talk to him. Well, we have seen time and time again that every government uses propaganda to further their own agenda and to disseminate information globally and nationally to their populace. We have seen, to a different extent, other companies. I can think of one that maybe just came out with a release just recently that has a really, really good job of convincing people that their ecosystem is the only one that you ever need because it's perfect. Well, now if they're controlling what we know, if they're controlling, the questions that we are thinking about asking, well, I mean, this is terrifying. And again, this goes back to the need of perhaps maybe even not even on a Socratic philosophical level, but on a common everyman question, which is, what should we do? Where should we go? What is important to you? And how is it that we can create algorithms that tamp down on bias, special interests? All of these for-profit companies, as an example, are generating these tools, and they have a vested interest in the success of them. It's a new mini arms race, even for governments. And so the question is the governance. The question is, why are we taking everything that they're doing and saying and trusting it implicitly? And this is where I think we will lose a major part of humanity if we exclude them because it's not algorithmically efficient, or it's a minority, or it's a voice that we don't want to hear. And so one of the greatest challenges that we have as a society, and this is maybe very difficult for humanity because we're a beautifully ever-changing organism, is trying to decide how to create something that is in some ways maybe as flawed as human, but also enables, enlightens, and heightens the capacity of humans to share and to express the great tapestry of creativity that makes us up as a species. And where that's going to end, I don't know. I'm certainly not qualified. There's some fantastic experts that are coming in from a pedagogical, you know, from a philosophical and from a technical side. And I just want to be the one writing down the pieces of paper of what they say and giving them a platform and enabling them not to come with answers, but to provide, again, as I said, perspective so that people can ask the right questions and let, awareness not become complicity. So that we can navigate this together, you know, culturally, societally, and from a human level, globally.
Yeah, very important considerations. And I think probably the most important challenge we have. So I want to thank you for your time, Brandon. There's a lot of considerations here that I think for all of us listening, it's really critical. I really urge people that want to engage with the event, intellecthorizon.com. Please engage. There's a lot of great things. I'm sure, Brandon, if you want to just tell how people can subscribe as well, how they can actually engage. And I'm sure this will be an entire day, but there will be probably stay online or just one day and then it disappears? Just if you can tell us a bit information about that.
Sure. So in a nutshell, intellecthorizon.com, it is on October 29th, October 28th, 2023, starting at 9 o'clock Kuala Lumpur time. And it runs for 24 hours, one world, one voice in XR, AI, Web3. We're adding additional speakers. We already have Oxford, Cornell, MIT, ASB, Regent, Waterloo. It goes on and on. And some of the exciting things are there's global events at multiple universities to learn AI robotics without even having to need to know how to program called CyberClash. That's going to be more universities are going to be added this week. We have XR speakers that are going to be added. And as a part of the idea of helping people that are impacted from job losses, especially in the video game industry, Starship Seekers, which is you get to go to a technology and video game recruiter petting zoo so that you can find your next crew and get a job faster. And then the final one, the one that I'm most excited about, is over $270 billion in private equity and venture capital funds are going to be secret shopping, where we literally give the stage to startups at Starshot Startups. And startups can apply by October 20th. And the best part about all of this is it is 100% free. So there's no cost at all. And there's no corporate sponsors. So this is something that I've taken care of all of the logistics to make sure that it can be as true, authentic, and no strings attached as possible. And we want you guys to come away without feeling some sort of strange desire of buying coffee or some cloud service by the end of it.
Thank you so much, Brandon. It's been an honor. We'll put all the links for people listening to us and as well for your bio and for the organization. Please engage. And I think, like you said, Brandon, I think the most important thing right now is whatever we're doing in our daily lives, I think we need to have some sense of responsibility, a lot of sense of responsibility, but there's a lot of ways you can learn and engage with personalities like you and events like yours. And kudos to that and good luck for the event. And thank you so much.
Thank you so much. And especially you as an expert and a torchbearer as well. One of the most important voices in the sector, not to be forgotten. Perfect. Thank you guys.
Take care. An honor.